Hey, Hawkeye fans, Chad Lysico of the Des Moines Register, along with Dargan Southard of the Des Moines Register. We were in Iowa City last night for the NCAA selection show. Thank you for your patience, text groupers, and for your feedback. We decided to do it this morning rather than late at night. Gives us a chance to digest the bracket a little bit more. Gave me a chance to get home. Trying on this green sweatshirt for the first time. I got it for Christmas. Haven't worn it once. But I decided today is the day. I thought it'd be kind of weird to wear it yesterday on St. Patrick's Day, like to the press conference. So here we are, debuting the green sweatshirt, Dargan. And we got a bracket to talk about. We don't have an opponent yet for the Hawkeyes, but we know they're going to play at 2 p.m. on Saturday on ABC.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to start with what was surprising, that was really the only thing to me that was super surprising was that the first round games – Iowa's set up to play Saturday, Monday instead of Friday, Sunday. Don't think it'll really make that big of a difference because Iowa's obviously going to sell out the game. No matter, they could have played it at 3 a.m. on Monday and Iowa probably would have sold it out. So that's not that huge of a deal. I guess the thing that jumps out to me first is, you know, if you kind of scan the reactions nationally across the board, the narrative right now is that Iowa got not only the toughest bracket, but, you know, a bracket loaded with familiarity with the Hawkeyes and all that. And, you know, while there are some teams in Iowa's bracket that have played well for extended stretches this year and, you know, were highly ranked at one point, I actually really like Iowa's draw. And it feels manageable given what it could have been. And so, you know, you kind of go through here and, you know, a lot of talk about the Kansas State potential matchup that, when you think about it, they could potentially play a non-conference opponent three times in 1 year. Like, I don't even know how you would possibly do that other than the way that this coincidence has lined up. So I did agree with Lisa Bluter that I was surprised to see Iowa and Kansas State, you know, potentially playing each other again. We'll get into it later, but I actually think the familiarity there favors Iowa, and isn't a detriment. So, and then, you know, the bottom half of the bracket with LSU and UCLA kind of headlining things there. You know, it seemed inevitable that the committee was going to set Iowa up to, you know, a glitzy matchup with somebody, you know, before the Final Four, and LSU obviously fits that bill, but I'm going to go on record here. And I say that for one reason or another, the Iowa LSU matchup will not materialize. So if you're asking me to pick, I think it's UCLA, and UCLA is a good team. One that has some things that can certainly give Iowa problems, but you know, you get to the Elite Eight and everybody's good most likely. And so, to me, that doesn't necessarily feel like a stretch to have that be the Elite Eight opponent. So, yeah. And then of course, you know, if you look at last year, none of the predictions that I just said seed wise actually happened. So there's that element to it as well. But, I actually like the way that everything shaked out for the Hawkeyes.
So I think the team that got the worst draw in this region is UCLA because, you know, losing in the Pac-12 semifinals dropped them from a sure one seed mm-hmm. to the number 7 overall seed in the tournament. And now they get to, and then LSU, you know, goes to the 10 overall seed. That's how they do it. So, you know, and UConn, I think would have been the 9 overall seed. Is that right? No, they would have been the 11. Anyway.
Yeah. That's
so So let's just go through the bracket. So those that haven't seen it, you're listening to the podcast, you don't even really know what's going on for the first time. So Iowa's a one seed, first time since 1992. And as Dargan said, it's a beneficial draw for a one seed, honestly, like through the first three games, I feel like. I don't feel like there's anything crazy there that Iowa can't overcome. And that's what you want as a one seed. You want that reward. Like if you're a two seed, you're going to face LSU in the Sweet 16. So Iowa did a great job earning this one seed. Enjoy that. And you know, it's still going to be tough. It's not going to be easy, but the one seed, so they'll face either Tennessee Martin or Holy Cross on Saturday. We're not going to waste a lot of time talking about that. That game will be Thursday in Carver, by the way, if you want to watch Iowa's next opponent,
should be a rocking environment, I would assume.
Yeah. That game, there's no reason to worry about that. So we're not going to talk about that. Monday night against either West Virginia or Princeton. I'm sorry, not Creighton, but Creighton is in Iowa's bracket, by the way. That will be interesting. We'll talk about that. Then it would be Colorado is the five seed. Yep. Kansas State is the four. Of course, Iowa met Colorado as a six in the Sweet 16 last year. And also, just FYI, also in the top bracket is Drake. Drake, the 12th seed. That'll be interesting. I don't think that's impossible that they beat Colorado.
You look at Drake was in Iowa's bracket last year and nearly beat Louisville in the first game. That would have changed the whole bracket. So, yeah, I mean, Drake's going to have a little bit of an uphill battle to get to a matchup with Iowa. But, you know, I think that's the biggest, you know, everybody talks about, oh, the women's game is so much better and the parity is so much better. I feel like that's one of the biggest differences is now on the women's side, you can actually realistically talk about like a 12 beating a 5 or, you know, a 12 getting to the Sweet 16. Whereas, you know, not too long ago, not only would the one seed roll to the Final Four, but they would beat, you know, win their first three games by 30, 40 points. So I think that's been one of the biggest improvements and reasons for excitement so much with the women's tournament is now these upsets that you see so much on the men's side have a chance to materialize way more than they used to.
Yeah. So let's just table the LSU UCLA conversation for just a little bit. And let's just focus on the upper half of the Albany two bracket. We should emphasize here that Iowa is in Albany, not Portland. Should it advance to the Sweet 16, which I feel like in looking at the bracket, Dargan could be a huge benefit because they're the 2 through 5 seeds, you know, the most likely seeds to make the Sweet 16 are not Eastern teams. You got a Southern team in LSU, you got a West Coast team in UCLA, another Pac-12 team in Colorado, and then K-State is the other one. So you're not, and that's not a notorious women's basketball traveling fan base. So South Carolina, in theory, would be in the Albany bracket, but that's the complete other side of the whole 68-team deal. And they would play on a different day than Iowa. So you're going to get a potential pro-Iowa crowd in Albany versus, you know, some of Charlie Cream's projections up until the final days had UConn as the 3 seed in Iowa's Albany region. So that also was avoided here. So again, I know we're looking at some of the positives, but I'm just saying the top, there are some, I think the Albany thing plays into it. It's drivable. It's not easily drivable, but it is drivable from Eastern Iowa. We're not going to drive it, but
no, I'm not going to be driving
if that happens, but I'll be booking a plane ticket. But anyway, the top half of the bracket, Dargan, let's focus on that one by one because we'll get to the LSU conversation. That's good to tease.
Right.
8-9 matchup, West Virginia-Princeton. That's the real thing we probably should be talking about because that's most urgent on Monday night after Iowa advances on Saturday. West Virginia, 24-7. Princeton played UCLA to a 3-point game earlier this year. These are not slouch teams. What do you make of those two teams right now, Dargan?
Yeah. You know, obviously the second round game has been, 2 years ago, it was the hurdle and even last year was problematic at times. So I would imagine that, you know, those ACC SEC teams that were, you know, several of them were kind of hovering in that 8-10 range. You know, I think avoiding one of those coming here is a good thing. You look at West Virginia's season, they were 20-2 on February 6th and has since gone 4-5. And you, as we get through these teams, that'll be a common theme of teams in Iowa's bracket have not necessarily finished the season well. And so, you know, that's not always an indicative of how the tournament's going to go for those teams, but I think it certainly helps Iowa a little bit there. It was interesting. I'm sure the masses have seen the clip of the West Virginia coach.
Yes, this was definitely on our list. Yeah, go ahead.
Running his mouth saying, hey, let's win one and then send Caitlin Clark packing or something to that degree. That's some bold words in general, but especially bold when you have an 8-9 game that you have to win first. So yeah, that was some interesting choice. And then Princeton, you know, I don't know if this will make a ton of difference, but Princeton actually came to Carver Hawkeye Arena back in 2019. And so I looked it up. It was the same coach that's there now. It was her first season. And that game went to overtime on a just absurd banked in three at the horn that sent that game to overtime. And, you know, you say, oh, well, that was 5 years ago or almost 5 years ago. Well, Kate Martin and Gabby Marshall were on that team. And, you know, even though obviously the roster has changed and everything's like that, you know, that's just kind of a mental reminder, I'm sure, of how quickly, you know, things could go wrong in this tournament. But, yeah, I mean, I think 8-9 is a manageable scene for Iowa. Again, it's two teams that did a lot of winning this year, but maybe didn't quite play as well against the upper tier teams that they faced for Princeton in the non-conference and West Virginia going through the Big 12, which was not an easy league this year. So, you know, Monday night at Carver Hawkeye Arena, Caitlin Clark's last home game, Martin and Gabby Marshall's last home game.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
It's going to be a lot of energy in there. And, you know, I feel like Iowa is comfortable with that tension, even if it does materialize on Monday, because of what they've been through the last 2 years with that second round game. And so I think that could definitely be one of the first times you see Iowa's kind of veteran presence and what they've been through make a difference, because, you know, that was certainly a theme that materialized last night was, you know, hey, this team this year, last year, the career, they've seen just about everything in every situation. And, you know, that doesn't guarantee that it's going to go well, but it certainly doesn't hurt. And I think you could definitely see that make a difference on Monday night.
Yeah, Caitlin said Princeton's coach, Carla Berube, was one of her coaches for the Team USA. And I just looked at her bio, and yeah, she led that under-16 team to a gold medal, U.S. under-16 team at the FIBA Americas championships, and the under-17 national team to a gold medal at the world championships. So I'm not sure if Caitlin was on both of those teams. I can't recall. She might have been.
But she definitely noted
that coach was one of her coaches. So again, there are little threads to Caitlin Clark and Iowa throughout every piece of this bracket. And now the West Virginia coach has introduced himself into Caitlin Clark history.
I imagine that clip,
by taunting her. By taunting
yeah,
her.
I imagine that clip. Just as
there's no chance back, she hasn't seen it.
No. Yes, well, and if you go back to last year, if you remember to start, it was that Southeastern Louisiana video.
Where, oh yeah, right.
I don't care remember if it was the coach or the player.
I think it was the coach.
It was the coach kind of started running the mouth, and that got back to Iowa, and obviously that, you know, did that game unfolded as expected. So if Caitlin Clark and Iowa as a team haven't seen that yet, I'm sure they'll see it before Monday. And that's poking the bear doesn't seem super smart there.
Right. So as you said, so if Iowa does get past the Iowa City bracket, and what a disappointment that would be if somehow this season ended Monday night in Iowa City. I mean, that would just be, I don't even know.
Yeah. I mean,
how, you know, people would cope with that.
Depending on who you ask, there's different, like, I guess, acceptable endings to this season. Not getting out of Carver would be not acceptable, really, in any fashion.
Right. And I put this in my initial reaction column as I think a Sweet 16 exit also would qualify. I think they've got to get to the Elite Eight to feel like, I don't know. It's been a great season, but to go out in the Sweet 16 in Caitlin's senior year, Kate Martin's senior year, Gabby Marshall's senior year, would be pretty disappointing. Now, it can happen. That's the thing I pointed out too. I mean, for example, Indiana is a 4 seed in this bracket, Dargan. So that's the type of team you've got to beat here. It's not easy. And Iowa shot 5 for 28 from three against Indiana just less than a month ago. So one cold shooting night from three, one off Caitlin Clark night. Heck, the way it looks like they're not going to have Molly Davis back for a good amount of time yet, you know, foul trouble could really hurt, yep, you know, totally impact this team because the depth just is not there anymore. So We're not saying they should breeze to the Elite Eight, but it would be a disappointment if they don't make the Elite Eight. So refresh my memory. I was looking up some stuff. Did you talk about K-State and Colorado kind of entering on a slide already?
No, we haven't gone there. And so
go for it.
You know, that's what you see a lot of times in that 4-5 range, is maybe some teams that had some elite stretches during the season, but maybe couldn't put it through, you know, from, you know, the whole year. And Kansas State and Colorado pretty much fit that exactly. Just looking at some records here, Kansas State was 20-1 on January 27th and has since gone 5-6. And, you know, that was Ayoka Lee coming back from an injury. So that was certainly a little bit explainable, but, you know, they did get to the Big 12 title game, but not as strong of a finish as the start. And then Colorado's was even more drastic. I mean, they were 20-3 on February 9th and have gone 2-6 since then, with a lot of ranked losses to the up, you know, the upper echelon of the Pac-12. So, I 100% agree. You know, I think if it had been, you know, a team with maybe a little more historical prestige that Iowa had to face in the Sweet 16, you could maybe say, okay, that's not, you know, that's not what Iowa fans want, but it's understandable. But I think you got to beat Kansas State or Colorado if you want to, you know, fully put the stamp on your elite presence in the sport. And so, you know, if you look, obviously the Kansas State familiarity was a big topic. But I actually think that, you know, you think about the NCAA tournament, and unfamiliarity is such a common hurdle, you know, whether it's what sends you home or what advances you, you know, taking advantage of matchups that teams have a very short window to prepare for. And so for Iowa to, you know, probably just refresh itself on the Kansas State scout, I feel like that's going to make, I feel like that benefits Iowa, especially because that second win or the second game against Kansas State down in Florida came without Hannah Stolke. And so that she had gotten hurt, you know, that Friday down in Florida. And so, you know, when you look at the two matchups against Kansas State, the first one in Carver where Caitlin Clark had one of the worst games of her career, that feels much more like an anomaly than the second matchup, which was a close game where Iowa kind of pulled it out at the end. So my opinion, I think that Iowa should feel good about the Kansas State matchup. And you know that, hey, you know, if that's what's materialized and that's what sends Iowa home, you at least knew what you were expecting to get. It wasn't some big surprise, something that you didn't prepare for. And so I feel like that would be a little easier to wrap your head around as everybody kind of tries to figure out teams on the fly. So, and that Kansas State Colorado game is going to be a good one in Manhattan too. If that is what materializes, I could see either team winning that. So I think it's a good reminder, as I heard Caitlin Clark overheard her talking to some people, is, you know, they're not going to have to play everybody in this bracket. So as much as the depth there seems like a problem, you know, they're only going to have to play a handful of these teams. And so I think that's important to remember as you kind of dissect and look at everything that could possibly happen.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely key to focus on if you're Iowa. You know, you can get halfway to the Final Four just by taking care of business here in Iowa City over the next couple days, you know, by Monday night. So that's what you got to try to do. Lisa Bluter did say, someone asked her real late last night, you know, would you rather face fresh teams or would you rather face familiar teams? She said she would rather face newer teams. I think Iowa has a lot of confidence in its scouting ability with Jenny Fitzgerald. She's incredible. I know they've been working on some of these potential 8-9 matchups. Jan Jensen even said last night they weren't working on UCLA, but they're working on taller players like UCLA is going to have potentially in the Elite Eight. So they've been working on a little bit of that stuff. And she said that the one thing Bluter said about the familiarity is she likes it when a team hasn't faced Caitlin Clark before because they don't know what it's like. You know, you just see the highlights on TV. We saw that play out last year, right? I mean, it was, you know, she dominated Louisville. She dominated Colorado. She dominated South Carolina. You know, she kind of ran through the bracket there. And, you know, K-State does have that familiarity, like you said. I mean, they have plans to defend her. We saw, you know, we've seen Nebraska at times have success with Caitlin, you know, second or third time around. I mean, it took a while for Nebraska, admittedly, right. But anyway. There's two sides of it because they've seen Iowa before too.
Yeah, and you know, I think probably another reason why Iowa could take advantage of the unfamiliarity is going back to a quote that Cynthia Falter said after the Big Ten tournament was, you know, we're a hard scout because we don't even know fully what we're going to do when we get out there. And so I do agree that it is to Iowa's benefit when they face a team that hasn't, you know, dealt with the Caitlin Clark experience. I can definitely see why that would be something that you would feel good about. But again, I think a big mental perception of this whole thing is, did Iowa get a tough path or do the other teams have a tough path because Iowa's in there as well? And so, you know, you're a one seed, you're at the top. There's a mental pressure that inevitably comes with that. But at the same time, like you have the chance to take charge of the bracket and really kind of dictate things. So, it feels like Iowa has mentally put itself in a position where it feels that way. And so, you know, we'll see what happens over the next few weeks.
Yeah. I'll just tease it a little bit, but I'm putting together a piece, on Caitlin this week about her postseason success. She is 20, not just her, but since she's been at Iowa, she is 20-4 in postseason play. And that's
silly.
I mean, that's like playing your tournament level teams. That's like Mahomes, you know, when they talk about his playoff record, like his career, he's got like more playoff games than like a season. And his playoff numbers are like, you know, 5,000 some yards, you know, hardly any turnovers, tons of wins, hardly, you know, it's like that for Caitlin, 20-4. And two of those losses, obviously, were as a freshman. Maybe I'm missing one. No, I'm not. Because she's had three losses in the NCAAs and one in the Big Ten tournament. So that's it.
Yep.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, so she's going to step. I think she's going to rise to the occasion is all I'm saying.
Well, and going back to this is kind of side story, but the breakdown that Tim Legler had on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, I thought, you know, Scott Van Pelt asked him, you know, what is the one thing about Caitlin that makes her apart from everyone else? And I thought Legler summed it up perfectly by saying she makes moments that should be really stressful and really hard and really, you know, a big deal. She makes them look very easy. And so I think that plays into what you just said about the NCAA tournament success. And especially now knowing that she knows this is her last NCAA tournament. I think it's no surprise that somebody like her with the mental fortitude that she has, you know, relishes these moments and has probably in a way been waiting for this moment the whole year. I think, you know, sometimes we get Caitlin's production sometimes seems a little redundant and I guess, you know, doesn't always pop for people who have been covering her as much, but you look up in the casual stat lines that she's able to generate where it doesn't even feel like she's played that well. And you look up and she has 35 points at the end of the game. The number of times that she's able to do that on top of all the, you know, incredible performances really kind of sets the stage for, you know, what I feel like and a lot of people feel like is going to be a big ending here.
Yeah. That just makes me think like, since the Creighton loss, I'm gonna tabulate her postseason numbers. But since then, for this story, I promise I'll put that in this story because I don't know what exactly they are, but I bet they're pretty absurd. There'd be 12 games, 11-1 record. The only loss to LSU when she was in foul trouble and got a ridiculous technical foul. So, and two dumb charges that weren't charges. So,
yes.
Anyway, Let's talk about LSU. Speaking of bad officiating, if Iowa gets to the Elite Eight, that's what everyone's talking about. Oh, Iowa got the worst draw of all the one seeds. You look at the odds, Iowa is still the number two national title favorite at plus 550. South Carolina, pretty much an even money favorite, slightly minus money. So South Carolina gets a pretty good draw, I would say. Ohio State's the two in their region. Oregon State?
No, Notre Dame's the two with South Carolina.
I'm sorry. My bad.
And then the three is Oregon State and the four is Indiana, I believe.
Yeah, I was thinking about the projections. Appreciate you clarifying. But LSU is the third choice of among odds makers for the national title. Interestingly, the other number one seeds, Texas is plus 1,500 and USC plus 5,000, a number one seed. So I feel like there's a perception out there, Dargan, that Iowa would have been better off just playing basically a Pac-12 tournament, you know, type of thing. They would have just rather seen anybody but LSU or UConn. Is that a real, you know, is the fact that they're going to have to potentially face an LSU in the Elite Eight, how much does that worry you?
I mean, I definitely think that Iowa could struggle against LSU again. I mean, that doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility. You know, one thing I will note is if it does materialize, LSU's probably going to have a pretty emotional second round game playing Louisville in, you know, a Haley Van Lith revenge game, so to speak. And so, you know, going through that, and then obviously LSU would have to beat UCLA in all likelihood. So you're talking about what I feel like could potentially be more of a emotionally draining route to the Elite Eight than Iowa has to take. And, you know, whether or not that'll make a difference is TBD, but I think it could. I feel like I was thinking about this last night, and I think the best thing about if Iowa LSU materializes is since it's an Elite Eight matchup, it'll only be discussed for like a day and a half rather than if it was a Sweet 16 matchup or a Final Four matchup and we had to hear about it for a week. And so, you know, I think that I don't know if that favors anybody or anything like that, but I do think that that is going to limit some of the, you know, inevitable absurdity that comes with analyzing that rematch. And so, again, like, Iowa didn't have a lot of success last year against LSU, and you know, you can chalk that up to a ridiculous shooting performance, and maybe LSU doesn't get that again, and Iowa's in the game, you know, for a longer stretch and can take it at the end. But you know, again, it's the Elite Eight. Whether it's Iowa, whether it's LSU or UCLA, I mean, you were going to have to, you know, getting the upset gifts, I guess that you could call them, that Iowa got last year, having to face a 7, a 6, and a 5 to go to the Final Four. I mean, that just doesn't, you know, really happen all that much, particularly on the women's side. So, you know, I guess there could have been a team that maybe would have been a better matchup, but, you know, I just feel like that once, if Iowa gets to the Elite Eight against either of those teams, then, you know, this is just what happens when you're really good and you're deep in the tournament. You know, you play other good teams and you got to find a way to make it work.
Yeah. Looking at LSU's schedule, I mean, I kind of looked through Louisville a little bit. I don't see LSU having a ton of trouble with Louisville. I think it'll be, you know, a good storyline, but I feel like it doesn't seem like Louisville is the same type of team it was last year. We'll see, but you're right. It could, you never know. It's hard to believe for me that LSU is like a three seed given their resume. I mean, I'm trying to understand how they are like the third three seed, basically, or second three seed.
They definitely had less turbulence this year than like a UConn, who, you know, is kind of gone like this while fighting injuries. So, you know, I think the LSU season certainly started rocky, you know, with the Colorado loss and just kind of, you know, wrapping your head around the off season that was with LSU. But yeah, I mean, the Tigers seem like they've settled in and they've, you know, found the rhythm that works for them with so many big time pieces. And obviously, you know, for all of Kim Mulkey's personality flaws, she is a good basketball coach. So, I knew that the committee was going to try to orchestrate something along these lines, whether it was Iowa and Juju or Iowa and UConn or Iowa, you know, Iowa being as big as it is right now, you can pretty much find a good storyline with almost them versus every team that's at the top right now. So as far as, you know, the criticism about, oh, you know, they just put those teams in the same bracket for the ratings matchup. I mean, I was going to be a ratings magnet pretty much anytime they play. So I think that's just where the Hawkeyes are at right now. And that's how things are going to be, you know, with this spotlight on them going through this tournament.
And then we should talk about the number two seed in this region before we finish up. That's the UCLA Bruins. This is a team that's 25-6. As I mentioned, they lost to USC in like double overtime in the conference tournament. It's good. Yeah, it's a good team. Lauren Betts was a transfer that Iowa fans wanted. She transferred from Stanford to UCLA, and she's 6'7". That could be a problem for Iowa. I mean, that's different.
Absolutely.
So, be careful what you wish for. Maybe LSU would be an easier path. Who knows? But this is a good UCLA team. I mean, they've beaten, you know, just about everybody in their path. Lost to Oregon State, lost to Stanford. Those are both road games. The only weird one was kind of a home loss to Washington State. They lost at USC. So those are basically their losses this year. It's a good team. And I think they're going to have plenty of motivation to beat LSU. And so if we do get to Albany, that'll be fun to watch for you and Absolutely. I, to, you know, especially if Iowa can like take care of business, you know, and then just see who they're going to play. That'll be fun to watch. It's going to be the whole bracket's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, it's just going to take whoever they're going to play in the Elite Eight. If they get there, it's going to require a great performance because it's not easy. There's a lot more parity in women's basketball now than there used to be.
Yeah. And I mean, if you go through the two seeds, I mean, Notre Dame is probably the weakest two seed, but obviously South Carolina was going to get that. They couldn't go with they weren't going to put them with Ohio State. So it's pretty much, did you want UCLA or did you want Stanford? And so, you know, both of them obviously have size that could be a problem for Iowa, you know, with Brink and Betts there. But again, you know, it's deep in the tournament. These are the types of teams that you're going to have to beat if you want to cement, you know, a Final Four bid. And I was shocked that UCLA has actually never made the Final Four. So this would be going for their, you know, that could be potentially at stake as well. So, one thing, I guess, I don't know if this will matter, but UCLA is, you know, maybe traveling as far as anybody, going from LA all the way to Albany. And obviously, you know, there were so many good Pac-12 teams that somebody was going to have to do that. So, and it'll be interesting just to kind of look at the Pac-12 as a whole. The conference was obviously so deep this year and had a lot of good teams that inevitably kind of beat up on each other. And so it'll be interesting to see if that year, you know, the draining year, the intense year that the Pac-12 had, if those teams are going to be better in the NCAA tournament or worse in the NCAA tournament for it, because I think you could probably make a case either way, that, you know, could go either way. And so, again, you know, one thing that came up repeatedly last night that we've talked about pretty much here and there throughout the whole year is, you know, I think it's fair to say that this team is better prepared for the NCAA tournament than Iowa was at this time last year. You know, just dealing with being in the spotlight the whole year, dealing with the environments, dealing with Caitlin's fame, dealing with, you know, everything that comes with being one of the teams at the top. And, you know, again, that there's no way to know exactly what is going to make a difference or what isn't going to make a difference. But to have that kind of in your toolbox that, you know, you there's not going to be a moment that is going to overwhelm Iowa. I don't think, you know, they may not win. They may lose a game they're not supposed to. But I just don't think that it's going to be a situation where Iowa feels overwhelmed by anything that is coming. And again, you know, with Caitlin's career ending, there's going to be a lot of emotion, a big spotlight on Iowa all the way through. There was going to be regardless, but with, you know, it being the final act of Caitlin's career, certainly going to emphasize that. And so you talk about another team that went through what was a draining season at times. You know, Iowa certainly feels like it could pay off this time of year. And it's easy to see a way that it can, given, you know, what's coming down the road.
So a couple of last things. It's important to point out the bracket that Iowa would face if they do make the Final Four. So we've kind of gone through this path. The one seed, as we mentioned, USC is the number three overall seed. Ohio State is the two seed, and UConn is the three seed in that region. So probably one of those three teams. Virginia Tech, we'll see if they get Kitley back for the tournament. Mm-hmm. But they're the four seed. So, again, some familiarity there other than USC, but future Big Ten team. So it'll be a compelling matchup there if Iowa does make the Final Four, like Iowa UConn in the Final Four. I mean, are you kidding me? That would be so
another Iowa Ohio State matchup.
I kind of don't want that, but
no, I would rather them play UConn or Juju. I'd rather watch either one of those. I don't know that top three feels just as tough mm-hmm. as Iowa's top three. I mean, I know UConn's not had, you know, the smoothest year with injuries and stuff like that. But, you know, this is kind of the time that UConn usually gets it together. And Ohio State, I'd imagine they're playing with a lot of motivation too, after coughing up their one seed with a bad showing in Minneapolis. So, and then USC is obviously kind of seems to be next in line to take that spotlight once Caitlin moves on. So, the Final Four matchup, if Iowa gets there, will be very intriguing no matter how it shakes out. And, you know, if Iowa wins that, I think we all probably know what's coming in the title game. And that'll be its own animal for sure.
Yeah. Texas is the other number one seed. So South Carolina's, you know, biggest obstacle is probably Notre Dame and then maybe Texas.
Stanford.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to do some work to get there for sure. But
it doesn't feel like that. I mean, South Carolina getting to the title game feels, I would feel, especially considering their title odds are below even money, which if you follow gambling, to have a team with below even money title odds before the tournament even starts is just absurd. So
yeah, for sure. A couple final notes. The Iowa men play at 8 p.m. Tuesday night in the NIT. Also Kansas State. So the Hawkeyes season continues. The Hawkeyes are a three seed in the NIT. And I think if they win, they play either Saturday or Sunday, probably on the road. So we will, you know, they won't be in Carver, obviously.
they are not going to get the priority.
No. So women have that. So and then Molly Davis, that was the kind of the tangible update. Negative update, I would say. Lisa Bluter said we were hoping she'd be further along by now. Jan Jensen said we're still waiting for the swelling to go down. Molly's still limping. I mean, this has been 2 weeks since this knee injury. So to do quality physical therapy, you got to get that swelling down. I mean, you're still doing it, but it doesn't. They said she's not, or Bluter said they're not ruling Molly out for this week, but she's out for this week. There's no way she's going to play this week. We'll see. It almost seems like Final Four now is probably, in my mind, they didn't say this, but in my mind, I feel like Final Four is probably best case scenario for Molly to return.
Well, and Lisa went even further to say that if Molly does come back, you know, in the immediate future, that a Fulcher is probably going to keep that starting spot and they'll bring Davis off the bench, just as, you know, Iowa likes to do that when they're bringing somebody back from injury. When you had Jan Jensen on the radio show and she kind of provided an update earlier in the week, I assumed that we would get to today and there wouldn't really be a whole lot of change or a whole lot of eye-popping info, but that was not the case. I mean, that's as detailed of a grim injury update as I've heard Lisa Bluter give pretty much all season, you know, to say not only is she, you know, behind schedule, but you know, they haven't even really fully started the whole recovery process. So, yeah, I mean, that's an unfortunate caveat here down the stretch that, you know, there's at least probably a better than 50% chance that Molly Davis's college career is going to end with her on the bench. But again, you know, you never know when these hurdles come, and Iowa has done a decent job this year avoiding, you know, any major injury issues. So, it's unfortunate that the timing on this one could make a difference, you know, in March. But again, that to me was one of the main reason, you know, one of the many reasons why the Big Ten tournament was so big was getting Sydney Affolter, you know, not comfortable with, you know, that basketball responsibility, but just the comfort with being, you know, in the starting five on a team that's been, you know, arguably the most visible all season. So if you go back to, if the Big Ten tournament ends up being a springboard to a deep March run, I think you could go back and look at that being, you know, one of the many reasons why.
Yeah, we'll focus Wednesday's radio show a little bit more on the men because we'll have a game to talk about after Tuesday night. We went a little longer than I expected, Dargan, but the women, there's so many storylines to talk about here. So really good stuff. And just to finish the Molly Davis thing, what they really need probably at this point is just if she can get back for anything, like 3 or 4 backup minutes for Caitlin Clark, like if she gets two fouls. Right now they have Taylor McCabe running the backup point spot. Now other girls can bring it up the floor, but you know, Molly
Davis is really the only other true point guard on the roster.
Right. And so you basically at this point can't really afford many more injuries. I mean, if you get another injury, if you get foul trouble, you're out of luck. You're good. The starting five's good. After that, you know, they're okay, but you just don't, I mean, you really can't have, you know, 30 plus minutes from Kylie Fierbach. You know, it's just not something they've dealt with. Addy O'Grady can't, you know, they're not prepared to go, you know, a timeshare of O'Grady Goodman, you know, if Stolke goes out. There's just a lot of the margin for error has thinned a lot with Molly out, and it is kind of scary.
Definitely. And, you know, again, I think everybody had confidence that Sydney could step in and replace Molly in the starting lineup. But as you pointed out, that takes Sydney off the bench now, and the bench has certainly, you know, lost some firepower with that move. So it feels like we're going to have starter heavy minutes, you know, all the way through. And obviously that's not surprising with it being March, but I mean, if there are any other injury issues that come up over the next month, that could certainly be pretty crippling.
Thanks, Dargan. Good show today. Thanks, Hawkeye fans, for joining us. If you made it to the end, we really appreciate it. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you Wednesday for Hawk Central on radio. Interviews from Iowa City are Friday. The first 4 game is Thursday, so a lot of women's basketball to come this weekend from Iowa City. Dargan Southard, Chad Lystico. We might even see a Tyler Tashman appearance at the women's
cameo
tournament. It could happen. We'll see how the men do tomorrow night. Anyway, thanks for joining us. So long. Talk to you next time.